I know we have a lot of great historians out here, right? Well, give me the definition of the Pax Romana. The Pax Romana. Just throw it out anecdotally. Jacob knows. Yes, Jacob told me on the way over here what the Pax Romana was. And he said it was a time when the various tribes in the Roman Empire behaved themselves. And there was a relative peace, Pax, peace in Rome, peace in the empire. And it lasted roughly from 27 BC to about 180 AD. Now that's an important time period for us because that is the time of Christ, basically, and beyond. Now much of the Pax Romana was actually advantageous to the spreading of the gospel because it offered a vehicle for transmission of the gospel. The Roman roads, Christians could go freely throughout from city to city. Common language, Greek and Latin, and common law and order. Sorry. You know, however, that the Pax Romana was really only peaceful if you were a Roman citizen, and a wealthy one at that. We saw the recent Ben-Hur movie. You should see it. It's really good, actually. And it gives you a wonderful depiction of what it's like to be under the Empire of Rome if you're a conquered people. It tells you exactly what it was like for the Jews, which is really good, actually. And you know that much blood was spilled for Caesar in order to keep that peace and order, in order to keep the law in order. Much blood was spilled. The chariot games and the arenas were a symbol of Roman violence and greed. Now, often you knew how people in the ancient world behaved by how they behaved around the table with one another. The wealthy Romans would eat, and then they would eat some more, and then they would eat some more, and then they would puke, and then they would eat some more. It was a symbol of what their life was like. And there are other things that they did with their free time that makes our little revolution in the 60s look like a Sunday school picnic. You know what revolution I'm talking about. But I'll spare you those details. For the Jews, the table represented who you were, what you valued, what you believed in. This is why Jesus spent so much time teaching around the table. So much time giving his disciples instruction while they were eating. Every time he was around a table, it was an opportunity to teach his disciples and to challenge others. Today we find him in the house of a wealthy Pharisee. And if you go back to the Greek language, it says prominent arch-Pharisee. Very, very important. As I read the story, I wonder to myself, who invited Jesus? And why did they invite him? It appears to be a setup from the start. The Pharisees are watching him, maliciously watching him, to see if they could get him to break the Sabbath. And we refer to last week's sermon. Now, our story today is sandwiched between Jesus healing a man with dropsy who came in to this dinner party on the Sabbath, and with another parable that Jesus tells about the kingdom of God. A man throws a feast, and the people make all kinds of excuses as to why they can't come. And so he says, basically, the same kind of conclusion. He gives basically the same kind of conclusion. Invite the poor and the lame and the crippled. If these folks won't come, they will come. and they will taste of the feast in the kingdom of heaven. Today's lessons are simple. Don't take the seat of honor when you are invited to a dinner. And when you throw your own party, invite the poor, the lame, and the weak, those who cannot return the favor, those who can't invite you back. Well, we had chicken at our party. Well, we had lamb at our party. Why don't you come and we'll have turkey? No, why don't you come? We'll have the best beef you've ever had. Filet mignon. Jesus says no. Invite the ones who can invite you back. Jesus is offering what I would call a Pax Christi to the Roman Pax Romana. He's offering a different way of doing things, a different way of seeing the world altogether. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. That is an upside-down saying of Jesus. The context he gives is hospitality. When Jesus speaks of the seats of honor and the other seats, I believe he has in mind that poor fellow that came in to be healed. You notice in the Gospels, especially in Luke, people pop in off the street to see Jesus, and they seem to have complete freedom to do so. You ever thrown a party at your house, and all of a sudden a bunch of strangers show up and start asking for handouts? Probably not. But this was actually common in this context, in the ancient world. You invite the rabbi over, everybody in the community can come here. And everybody in the community can actually have the leftovers from the table. So the man with dropsy comes in. He's got nowhere to sit. He belongs nowhere on the table. He belongs nowhere anywhere. And Jesus heals him. And then Jesus says, don't choose the seat of honor. In other words, the man who came to be healed, the man who was filled with desperation, the man who had nothing, the man who had no seat, the man who had nowhere to go, you be like that. You be like that. Because you are desperate without Christ. Be like the one who has no seat at the table, not even the one near the leftovers. Be like the one who is desperate for God's mercy. You think Pontius Pilate was desperate for any mercy? Herod, the prominent Romans, even the prominent Jews? They didn't ask for mercy. It was a sign of weakness. Jesus says, be like the poor and the lame and the blind, because as St. Francis says, we are all poor in the eyes of the Lord. That's the starting place for Jesus. The heart of things, though, is what Jesus says about who you invite to your own party and what your motives are for that party to begin with. The Pharisees' invitation was based on imbalance and competition. The important invite the important because they are important and might get invited to something else important. The Pax Romana. The city of man, if I can use Augustine's analogy. But Jesus says, don't invite anyone that can reciprocate. Invite the desperate, the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. For such as these belong the kingdom of heaven. These are the ones who are invited to the greatest of feasts. Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, says Luke. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God, says Matthew. Very similar. The Christians of the ages have taken this seriously. They also remember the words of Hebrews that you heard today. Don't forget to show hospitality, because in welcoming strangers, many have welcomed angels unaware. And the words of Jesus, whatever you have done for the least of these, you have done for me. Saint Benedict said, when those visit your monastery by a bow of the head or by a complete prostration, Christ is to be adored because he is indeed welcomed in them. Saint Basil the Great, who helped write that creed that we're about to say in a moment, not only built guest houses for those who are sick and weak, who might want to see the monastic community, he built entire villages for those who were destitute, for that Christian deed to oversee and to care for. So how do we do this? With all the many needs of the world, I'm on the board of the St. Francis Center. I can tell you about all the needs there. And I will be making those known. People suffering in Louisiana, Italy, refugees in Syria, the earthquake in Burma, famine and drought in Haiti. The needs are legion. And we can get behind those causes and help concretely. Yet I believe there are opportunities that await us every single day. Never underestimate the power of a smile, says Mother Teresa. Never underestimate the chance every day of making a new friend. In your heart, you will have to decide how to follow Christ's injunction to open your table to the weak and the poor. You'll have to decide that. But even on a daily basis, there are opportunities for friendship and kindness. Robert Atwell says, in welcoming the stranger, I am welcoming the mercy of God into my life. It is not enough to offer food or accommodation. I must recognize the one, capital O, who comes to me incognito, disguised as a stranger or a pilgrim. We often see people in utilitarian ways. What can I get from this connection? How is he or she related to my next sale? How can this person make me look good? And even when we do good things, we are tempted to do it for society's points. Which, by the way, society's points are much more exhausting to gain than the most pharisaical of religious points. But for Jesus, he says, welcome the weak, because you know they cannot repay you. They cannot reciprocate. Welcome them because the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. For whoever exalts themselves will be humbled, and whoever humbles themselves will be exalted.